Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is December 28th, 2018, an auspicious day in Mac Observer history. We'll get to that in a minute with our two guests. First, we have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. It's good to be here.
Hey, also with me today, Dave Hamilton.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun, and we will get to it in just a moment. First, I want to tell y'all about our sponsors. Our first sponsor is Eve Energy, and Eve Energy is from the company that used to be Elgato that's now doing Eve products exclusively. So they can let you switch your appliances on and off with a simple tap on an app or a Siri voice command. You can see how much power your connected appliances are using. You can set everything up to use HomeKit. Like I said, you can just tell your Siri assistant to go ahead and turn those lights on and off or adjust anything else. You can set timers so that things are going on and off even if you're not home. Everything is set up using Bluetooth low energy, so there's no bridge or extra little box that you have to go find an Ethernet jack for somewhere in your house. You can learn more about the place you know and care about the most using Eve Energy. You can learn more at EVEHOME.com. That's evehome.com. Our second sponsor today is Opsgenie by Atlassian. When it comes to incidents, either planned or unplanned, it all comes down to how your company responds. Prompt and precise alerting is the critical first step because applications are more complex than ever. Incidents often require lots of coordination between operations and software development teams. That's why there's Opsgenie by Atlassian. Opsgenie empowers DevOps teams to plan disruptions and stay in control during unplanned incidents. They can respond quickly and efficiently, and the right people get notified thanks to integration with loads of services. You can go to opsgenie.com, opsgenie.com, and sign up for a free account today. Now, I told you it was an auspicious day in Mac Observer history, and the reason I said that is because Mac Observer has history, a whole lot of history, and as of today, that history dates back 20 years, which is why the two of you are with me today. Yes.
It actually goes further than 20 years.
It does. But as the Mac Observer.
The Mac, right. So let's start there. And then I there's some of this history that I'm not sure I know, at least not clearly. So I'm curious to learn a little bit too today. But yes, December 28th of 1998 was the day that we changed the name and URL of the site to MacObserver.com. It was previously Webintosh, and we'll get into that. But today was the day we did it. And it's always just been the day, right, Brian? Because that's the day we did it. And I've never really thought twice about it. And I don't know, a week or two ago, I was having a conversation with someone who was like, wow, 20 years, that's crazy. And I said, yeah, you know, we did it. And it was I said, it's actually coming up. You know, it's the 28th. I'm like, what in the world made you decide to like launch a new business and do a rebranding and all that on the week between Christmas and New Year's?
Oh, there was a very specific reason.
I know, but it wasn't like I'd never thought about like that. This is a terrible time of year to do that. Like they highlighted that this was like, what were you thinking? And I was like, oh, yeah, to your point, there was a perfect reason. In fact, that's why we rushed all this, because Macworld Expo used to be the first, you know, essentially the first week of January. And we wanted that was like the biggest event in our entire world here. We didn't want to wait a year to have the Mac Observer covering Macworld Expo. Dang, so that was the main reason.
No, there was another main reason.
Go.
The Mac Addict Network.
Oh, well, yeah, sure.
We wanted to launch with that name as the Mac Addict Network was taking on new people, I think. Or even right. Or were they launching?
No, they existed. They had previously existed. So the Mac Addict Network was, it was home. Its home was at MacAddict.com and from Future Publishing,
which used to be a print magazine, which for kids following along at home is like a blog, but printed out, and you bought a new copy every month.
Yeah, you can ask your parents about it. I think it still exists, and doesn't it exist in that form? Haven't I seen it like on newsstands and airports? Oh, maybe not. But they had an ad network, right? They were selling ads. Mm-hmm. This was pre-Google. You know, Google didn't even exist at that point, right?
Well, they were doing what Backbeat eventually did.
Well, so back Backbeat. Right. Backbeat Media. Right. They were selling ads and had a core group of sites. And we pestered them to allow us in. And finally they did. And we wanted to do that under this name as well. Right. So, I'd forgotten that was sort of a timing factor as well. But then I don't know how much of the story we'd want to tell, but then they weren't like, nobody's ever happy with their partner, their service providers, right? And so there were some things with MacAddict that we were all like, hey, we have some ideas for you, and trying to tell them these ideas. And they were receptive to that, at least ostensibly. And so now I'm fast forwarding another 8-9 months or something. And they had a summit meeting of MacAddict network partners in San Francisco. And that summit meeting turned out to be planned around just three of us. It was me, Phil Pearson from Mac Surfer, and Kurt Christensen of Version Tracker. And
Tracker. Yeah.
Kurt doesn't like to fly. Even though he used to fly airplanes, like he doesn't, or this was 20 years ago. He didn't like to fly 19 years ago at the time. And so, but I think something happened with his schedule last minute. He couldn't make it. I think he had like a child being born or something. It was a good excuse. It wasn't just that he didn't want to fly. So it turned out to be just me and Phil in this room with like four MacAddict network people for a day and a half. And Phil's in it. Most of you, in fact, I'm probably the only person here that knows Phil, because Phil's kind of he's a quiet guy. I mean, he's a great publisher, but you know, in terms of his social presence, it's non-existent, at least on, you know, online. But Phil's he's a smart guy. He's very pensive, very thoughtful. His family's actually done some amazing things, but I'll leave that out of it. And he had some good ideas, but I realized he wasn't taking notes. So I started taking notes, like, okay, we're giving them all these ideas. Let's, you know, hold them accountable to this stuff and make sure. And so we had this great meeting, and, you know, 2 months later, or whatever, it was still the same as it ever was. They hadn't done anything. And, Phil and a couple other people came to us.
It's a hard business to be in.
Yes. Any business is hard. I mean, but anyway, you know, people came to us, you know, Phil, the other MacAddict publishers and other folks we knew.
The gaming, the Mac gaming site was one of the first.
Yeah. Mike Dixon from MacGamer and Dan Knight at Low and Mac came to us and said, okay, you guys, cause we'd started selling our own ads. We hired Greg Snyder. He was our first full-time employee. And, when MacTel Chapter 11, we picked him up from there. And they came to us and said, okay, will you guys sell our ads for us? You know, cause we don't want to. And Brian, you had the idea we should start a network. And so that's how Backbeat Media started. Cause it was like, hey, I have what could be a business plan. I took all these notes of things that should be done and aren't being done. And so let's just follow that, you know, and that's how Backbeat Media started. So that's the 28th of December, 1998 and forward, a brief history. It's not at all complete, but I think the interesting part here is how Mac Observer came to be, because it didn't just rise out of whole cloth. We acquired another business, and that business was called Webintosh. And Brian, you wrote for that business.
Yeah, I did. I had a web development business, and I wanted to make a young man named Dan Hughes had a site called the Cyber Dog Pound that focused on OpenDoc.
Yes, I remember that site.
And that's where I learned all about CyberDog and all about OpenDoc, and I became really enthusiastic about it. And he was looking, he said he had this secretive new project, and that he was looking for people to do a website. He was looking for people to do some hosting. He was looking for, and that's a key thing there, and he was looking for people to do some writing. And for whatever reason, I wanted to do the website, and he insisted everybody also submit a writing sample. And he did not select me to do my company to do the website, but he did ask me to write. And I figured, what the heck? It'll be some good exposure for my web company and my web design company, and it'll be fun. So I started writing for him, and about a year and a half later, he had gotten pretty burned out I asked if he wanted to be, if he wanted to sell, and he said yes. And I knew enough about my own business acumen to know that I needed Dave Hamilton involved. Just to be flat out blunt. And asked Dave if he wanted to get involved with this. And he said yes. And that's when the fun ensued.
Yeah. So Brian and I met because Computer Nerds down in Austin was a company I had partnered with for a while. And then while I was there, I guess we did we acquire your web design firm or partnered with you or something?
Eventually, yeah. There was a eventually it became more of an absorption.
An absorption. Okay. All right. Fair. I wasn't really involved in it. I was a junior partner there. And realized right about this time that that I was better friends with Lee Robin, the owner there, than I was business partners. And like we've talked about a ton about that on our Small Business Show podcast, that you got to have, you know, the right mix with a business partner. And so I was in the process of being bought out. I think that was right about the same time. I might have conflated. No, that was definitely right about the same time. Yeah. And so I was still working there, but I was just not involved in the management anymore. And it was great because I had gone down to working like 3 days a week. Look, folks, if you can ever get that schedule, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, right? You're off Wednesday and then you have the long weekend. You're off more days than you're on. Don't F it up. Like, leave it alone. It's awesome. Anyway, I effed it up.
Siri, remind me to talk to Dave about my work schedule.
Yeah, no, I effed it up. And Brian and I, you know, did exactly what Brian just said. He brought me in. We went through, the process of what I now know would be called due diligence, but it was just like finding out, what are we buying? How's this all working? And one of the things I found out, which Brian, to be fair to Dan, Brian knew, you probably told me about, but I didn't really pay attention to all the details at the time because I was sort of a reluctant, from my standpoint, this was like, well, it's relatively inexpensive to get involved in this. It's something to do. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it was a diversification for you.
It was something to do. Yeah.
And you were the king. You were the king of diversification.
Right. I am the king of diversification. It's true. Yeah. So I was like, well, okay, fine. It's not very expensive and could be fun. And cool. You know, I like the Mac. Obviously, I would go to Macworld Expo every year as an attendee, right? You know, not just as an attendee. I loved it. John Braun and I would go every year. So I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds like fun. Sure. And, you know, so we went through this due diligence process and realized, wait a minute, Dan, you don't own the domain webintosh.com. So what is it you think you're selling to us again? You know, and again, it wasn't very much money. It was like $5,000 or something. It wasn't, you know, it was like cheap. And it went down. The price did because, you know, he didn't own the domain. But it was like, well, okay, who owns the domain? It's like, well, I didn't have a credit card when I had to register the domain, so my friend Bob or somebody registered it for me. Bob. Yeah, I know. It's because of jackass. Well, you know, call it like I see it. So I tried to talk to Bob and be like, okay, you know, Dan is transferring the business to us, so I need you to transfer the domain to us. And Bob was like, no. I think it went a little differently than that. But that's essentially was the net of it. And I said, well, okay, like, what the hell? Like, we got to do this. Fine. Okay. Okay. And started thinking about it. It's like, well, we got to capture all that traffic, but we need to change the name. We're not going to build a business on the name that guy owns. We're not going to build a business on a name that anyone else owns, especially not that guy, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd like to point out that I knew I needed Dave involved. Right. And this is a prime example of that because, I would have mishandled this. I did mishandle it, Dave.
Fair. Yeah, fair. Okay. Yeah, whatever. Right? It all worked out. Yeah. And so we came up with a list of names, and I remember driving back from San Antonio to the Austin office of Nerds, and, you know, you and I were on the phone or whatever. I think I called you as I came up with names or something. and I prattled off a bunch of them to you, and you captured them. You wrote them down because it was like, I'm driving, you got to write these down. And obviously Mac Observer was one of them. There were several.
I remember that slightly differently.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I remember going back and forth, and neither of us were happy with anything.
No, that's true.
And then I remember a separate phone call, and I could be, you know, memory 20 years, right?
Yeah. But, yeah.
But what I remember is you calling back up separately.
Yes.
And saying to me, I've got it. Or something along those lines.
That's right. No, we'd hashed it out. And then, you know, driving time is like, you need, like, when you're doing stuff, anything, you know, you have what I call like where the time where you compress your brain and like actively think and actively work on stuff. And then you have to have the release where you'd have that sort of hypnotic time where your brain gets to just freely do whatever it wants. And it often processes all this information that you've sort of pumped into it. This is how I think. So we had that conversation, and then I had, you know, the hypnotic processing time of continuing to drive along I-35. And you're right. That's when it was like, oh, okay, wait a minute. And I called you back and I was like,
yeah, you were like, yeah. I've got it. You were like, you were dangling it.
Yeah, I did. I remember this now. Yeah, that's right. I totally forgotten that part of it, but there was that, and that's like an important, like, it's a business lesson, but life lesson. Like, you got to give yourself time to not think so that you can actually get the real thinking done. And so we did. So when we got back to the office, we registered MacObserver.com and, you know, set up a hosting account with a company called Pear, who was our host for a long time. I remember I set up that account, and then I had to go to do like a call somewhere. And I remembered the email came in saying, oh, your account's set up. And so I was like, oh, cool. And I think I did it like, you know, at the AGC offices or something, and got the website, you know, sort of stood up, you know, there. but anyway, you know, and then on the 28th, we bounced it over. But the bouncing over was an interesting thing because, you know, Bob held all the keys to webintosh.com, and he was the one that registered it. And so in order for it to point to a new IP address, which is all we wanted it to do, we wanted it to redirect so that we could point it to our new server and then have our server answer as Mac Observer. And, you know, if we could do that even just for a couple of weeks, we could capture all the traffic that we had just bought from Dan. And Bob wasn't really paying attention. He basically stopped. He, you know, ignored us. And I thought, ooh, well, that's good. Bob's ignoring us. So I've done domain transfers with Network Solutions because that's who you did it with 20 years ago. They were the only game in town.
That was it. Yeah,
that was it. But the way it worked was you would submit the request and then they would send out emails to all the contacts on the
right,
you know, on the account. And you had to either you could click you would reply to the email if you wanted to approve it. If you didn't want to approve it, you would do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew Bob would do exactly what Bob would do, is he would do nothing. And I could do something and Bob would never know. And so I did do something. I phonied up an email that would be appearing to come from Bob, because that's very easy to do. Email's not this secure thing or anything. It's still not all that secure. You could still do this. And I sent a confirmation email back that had the right string in it, because it also was sent to me. All I did was make the tech contact me, and I left the administrative and billing contacts as Bob, because it's his domain. Like, I wasn't trying to steal the domain. I was just trying to redirect it to where Webintosh now is.
Yes.
And might have a different name. You know, we moved servers, and so I had to do this thing. And so I made me the tech contact. And then once I did that, I was able to, you know, obviously move the IP. It stayed that way for a couple of years until Bob chose not to renew it. And I don't know that I ever told you this, Brian, but for whatever reason, I think it was like the domain was registered. Like, it was up in like October, November. And I thought, oh man, if I can get this, I'll buy it and I'll give it to Brian as a, you know, a Christmas present or whatever. Like, here's webintosh.com. And you know, by that point, like, domain harvesters had their robot engines or whatever running. So yeah. I was not able to get it, but you know, it was the thought.
I thought you did get it for a while.
No, I didn't. I mean, we held the ability to control it, because Bob ignored everything.
Right.
I
thought later you'd picked it up. I know that Dan ended up picking up webintosh.net.
.net. That's right. Like that was only like 5 or 6 years ago or something. It was certainly, you know, certainly not right away. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk for a second about what you guys were covering at that point in 1998, because earlier in 1998 is when Steve Jobs came back and debuted the iMac, the Bondi Blue iMac. It was designed by some guy that had worked at Apple for a little while. His name is Jonathan Ive, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Current models the current version of operating system was not OS X. The current operating system at that point was Mac OS 8.5.
That's right. Yeah.
And Mac OS 8.5 ran on models like the PowerBook 3400 and all of the, almost all of the Power Macintosh models that had a 4-digit number. So 7600, 8600, 9600.
The product line was a mess.
Yes. The 20th anniversary Macintosh as of this year is 20 years old because that came out in 1997. So these were this is the
clones
state
still existed.
Yeah.
Like I was using a power computing machine. At that point.
Well, they weren't being sold.
Had they said that stopped by that?
Yeah, that was like the first thing that Steve did when he returned was.
Yeah, because the iMac,
kill the cloning.
The iMac was sort of the follow up to.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Yeah. I'm conflating Macworld Expos pre and post.
Yes.
Starting Mac Observer, because I remember going to Mac, like the Macworld Expo in Boston, where Power Computing had the zip line. How they ever got insurance clearance for that.
Insurance clearance.
Yeah, you know, Mike Rosenfeld too. That's right.
Yeah, sweet summer child. So at the event in May of 98, when Steve announced the Bondi iMac, the other thing that came out at that point was the G3 PowerBook. It was the Wall Street PowerBook with kind of the curved little pattern on the front and the Apple logo. That I think was still upside down at that point. Like when you opened your computer, I think the Wall Street logo was still the wrong way.
Yeah.
Which was sort of the air quote upgrade that everybody wanted from the PowerBook was when you open it, is the logo upside down still? Oh, yeah, because that went on a lot longer than it should have. Anyway, so that's what we're talking about. Mac OS 8. I still have a Mac OS 8 t-shirt somewhere, I think. We're talking about,
but the whole reason that Steve was brought back, of course, was, and I know we're getting off track here, but was because of, you know, Next Step and all of that, which would then become OS X or Mac OS X or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I mean that was a part of that.
Yeah, but you guys are coming in like right as everything started to shift, which is the thing that I want to kind of put out there is like this is just after Steve came back, just after the iMac. The PowerBook G3.
Let me cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Let me cut to the chase. When we first started doing this, the key job requirement was to be able to find something, anything that anyone said about Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And point people to it.
Yes.
And Tech Help was sort of a thing. But news about new products, which were so few and far between from anyone, because there were so few people that were involved in the Mac space, that finding things like that, having people, developing that network of companies that would actually pay attention to you and alert you to what they were doing, that was what made the Mac Web. And if you remember, that's what we called it back then. It was the Mac Web.
It was Mac Web, yeah.
It was the Mac Web. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, like tech support was a part of it. I mean, there was Mac Fix It and Mac in Touch, right? Kind of catering to that audience. Yep. And then there was Mac Central.
Mac Central.
Then later was acquired to be Macworld.com's online presence or Macworld's online presence.
And Macadon.
Mac and N, Apple Insider, Mac Rumors.
Rumors. Before that, Mac OS Rumors.
Mac OS Rumors.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which should not, please do not mistake the two.
No, they did not change their name. They were two different sites. That's right.
Two different sites. One of them a joke and one of them an excellent site.
Yep. Yeah. You get to decide which is what. No.
And in those days, you had to guess, like you would like load each web page every day and look at it and see if you could read anything. And then you would find out later, like, oh, that thing that you read this morning, that guy got a takedown notice from Apple. So it must have been right. You know, and that was the only way that anything got confirmed, you know, was, oh, well, they had to take it down. And this is what it said, you know, and at least here in Portland, like, yeah, there weren't a lot of Mac users. There weren't a lot of, you know, Apple fans in general, but we did have a couple of authorized resellers. And so they would have parties for Mac OS launches, and they would do different things, like different events throughout the year. And so, you know, like, there was always a little bit of culture, at least here, around some of that. So I remember a whole lot of this happening, you know, as it happened. And I remember reading a lot of stuff on the web, and it was like you guys are talking about, you know, there was 8-10 different places that were getting it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody paid attention to Apple. It was a great time to buy Apple stock.
Yes.
It was actually a great time to buy any tech stocks.
That's true.
Seriously, because if you felt like you were able to do insider trading, which wasn't, I mean, it was, you know, trading on just publicly available news that no one was paying attention to.
Nobody else cared about it. Yeah.
Well, I think they cared. They just weren't paying attention. Yeah.
Here's another really big difference between then and now. Back then, and for probably the first 5 years that we were publishing, places like our site were sources for the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. They would cite us. They would cite Apple Insider. They would cite a host of other Mac websites, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they weren't doing their own Apple coverage. They would just, you know, oh, somebody, okay, those guys said it.
Yeah, well, and sometimes they would verify something that was said. Sometimes, right? But today, now there's probably three reporters whose full-time job is covering Apple for the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's another three who are doing, or at least two who are doing it for the New York Times. Yeah. And the same is true for Reuters. And the same is true for Bloomberg. Of course, Bloomberg has the fantastic Mark Gurman. And my point there is that the world is a completely different place than it was when we first got started. And please note that most of our competitors are gone.
Yes.
And it's because the skill sets needed today are vastly different than the skill sets needed 20 years ago or 25 years ago, because there were a couple of sites that did predate us by at least a couple of years. It's a different skill set. It's a different environment. The audience is different. Mm-hmm. Right? We were writing for the underdog, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Apple was beleaguered. Yeah. I mean, it was like that's why the Apple death knell started.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah,
our readers were people who were rooting for the underdog, and now that's no longer the case. And the content that is required to engage and entertain people today is vastly different than it was 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah, tech support is more important today. I mean, it was important then, but relatively more important today than it was then.
Agreed.
You know, just because of the way things, just because of that. Yeah.
Well, and the speed of information and being able to disseminate that at scale, like that scale now is so much different than what it was then, because you used to have to sort of find the website that said, you know, I installed the 861 update and it did this bad thing to my computer. Okay, I better hold off for a while. You know, you used to have to wait like a week or two to make sure you had enough reports to tell whether or not it was going to be okay on your machine. And now when Apple releases it in the morning, you can tell by the afternoon if it's any good because of the tools available to find out. Right. Like, yeah, guess what? The new iOS update took away the ability for my phone to make calls, you know, like you find that stuff out so much faster now.
I mentioned before that like Google has not existed for 20 years.
Right.
But the iPhone definitely hasn't, things were very different. There was a reason we didn't call it Apple Observer, that we called it Mac Observer, because that was the product line that Apple made in its entirety. That was it.
There wasn't even an iPod yet at that point.
No. Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
No.
Yeah.
So quick shout out along the way, right? Kyle Daddario.
Kyle D'Addario he worked for us. He now I think still works at Apple, and
he still works at Apple. Yeah.
One of the very first geniuses.
One of the
Apple
very
hired
first
him away from us.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Stole him away from us. I hate Apple for that. I love Kyle. Of course, Jeff Gamet.
Yeah,
we went a few years where we changed where we had a few people come and go, and then we had a very, very stable crew for a very long time. Jeff was with us for 13 years. How long has John been with us? 11 years?
It depends on how you count 12. It, but yeah. It's
something like that, right?
Yes.
And John Martellaro is I love that man, and we have a great crew today with Charlotte and Andrew and Kelly and Bob and Melissa, and who else is contributing?
Well, I mean, you know, John Braun, right? He was like the first new person that we brought on, right, as the Mac Observer, because he had to write something in order to get a press pass for that first Macworld Expo. So he started writing Monday's Mac Gadget. But he wasn't the first. I mean, he wasn't our only writer. We had Wes George, but Wes came in from Webintosh, and Randy and Gary, the idiots.
No. I recruited Wes.
You recruited Wes. Okay. All right. Okay. And Randy and Gary as well? Or were they from...
Yes. Idiots with Sticks.
From AWS, yeah.
They actually reached out to me. Oh, they had sent me something as developers, Dave.
Got it. Okay, Apartment so they were not Webintosh folks that came over.
I covered them at Webintosh.
Got it.
Because they had this game called Apartment Hunter.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and then they pitched us writing a gaming column, which I just loved to death.
It was great. Okay, so maybe John was the first then.
It was either John or Nancy Gravely.
Oh, that's right.
My mom was writing Computing with Bifocals.
That's right.
My first Mac was a typewriter, was the first name of her column, and then we changed it to Computing with Bifocals. She was writing for older folks. Who no one was writing for. Yeah. And it was either her or John, but I think it might have been John. But John actually took over Dave. He took over the Mac Gadget column from a guy named Dean.
Okay.
Dean no longer had time to write it, and I asked John if he wanted to take it over.
Ah, that's right. And I started Ask Dave, right?
For the same reason.
Yeah.
And Ask Dave was probably our biggest column. You just didn't have time to do it.
I didn't have time to do it. But Ask Dave, as you probably figured out, folks, it was just a column where I answered people's tech questions. And that very much more, it didn't just morph into, it fed into what became Mac Geek Gab.
Yep.
Because
sure did.
When we started Mac Geek Gab, the plan, at least in my head, was that I would start this podcast, I'd figure out like logistically how to get it done, all that stuff, and then hand it off to somebody else. And that didn't work. But the first week, John and I came up with a topic. You know, it was like whatever the latest version of Mac OS was. We talked about it. There was an update. Okay, great. We talked about that. The second week, I forget what the topic was. We talked about that. The third week, I had no idea what the topic was going to be, because it's really hard to come up with topics, you know, to do a podcast every day or every week or whatever. Like,
With tech help.
Well, it wasn't tech help. It was just, the tech help was not part of it. It was just like two guys, you know, rambling on about their favorite things in Mac OS Tiger or something. Like there was no tech help involved. And then week three was, crap, we got to come up with a topic. I said, you know what, man, like I'll just go and we'll make up questions. We'll say we got it from the mailbag. And we'll just answer people's questions and kind of we'll punt on this week. And it gives us another week to come up with an actual topic. And so I made up some of the questions. And then the others, I went into the Ask Dave archives because people were still sending in questions to that address, even though we hadn't published the column in years and years. And I pulled some of those out and answered the questions. And then, of course, you know, as soon as we did that, like 50 questions came in for the next week.
Yeah.
It was like, and luckily that's happened for 13 and a half years. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. So GeekGab predates Gamut by a couple of months?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. time dilation.
Yeah.
Is really, really. So, I mean, and this all, by the way, so like podcasts today is a very important part of what we're doing, what we do. And podcasts did not exist. There was Sean King's radio show.
Yeah.
It was very much set up like a radio show. But there was no podcasting.
No, Ricky Spiro sort of pioneered it for us in a sense with the weekly roundup.
With the weekly roundup, they became the Apple Context Machine.
Right.
And it's like everything is different. Every single little thing is different. And quite frankly, like Dave, what you've done over at Backbeat in that intervening time, right? That is a very important part of the independent Apple press.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And you pioneered a lot of stuff. You did a lot of hosting for people.
When Backbeat started, we were hosting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we'd figured it out. Yeah. There was no Dreamhost or anything like that. There was no Squarespace or anything like that back then. So you just had to do it yourself.
Yep. You know, and the serving the ads and managing all of that. And, you know, and then Dave, you had to figure out how to, and this to me is linked, the Backbeat history is separate from TMO history, but it's all sort of linked at the same time. You also had to figure out how to sell ads for podcasts. And now that's a very important part of the independent.
Yes, totally.
Right. Totally. And I, you know, I think that we, I think we've played a pretty integral role in a lot of things that have happened during that time. And I'm quite frankly, very proud of it.
Yeah. It's been a fun run. Looking forward to more. Yeah. Yep. It's good.
Yeah. Let's another 20 years.
Yeah. I'm the new kid because I've only been doing this for 10. So
yeah. If you told me this is what I 20 years ago, that this is what I would be doing for 5 years, I would have,
you'd still be laughing.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's not possible.
No.
And we want to, I guess, you know, one more shout out to all of the readers and listeners at TMO, including those who have been with us back when Apple was beleaguered, and all the new people that we've met along the way.
Yeah. That's why we do it.
That's why we do it. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And it's rewarding. It's awesome getting to hear from all of you and interacting with you and helping all of you. It's like, it's great. It really is.
Yeah. Yep.
So thank you.
Yeah. A lot of names that have, kicked in ideas and made comments that, you know, corrected me or, you know, found a mistake or gave us tips and did all these things.
Yeah. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So thanks, Brian. Thanks for, bringing me in 20 years and 4 weeks ago or something.
Hey, thanks for joining in.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Like,
seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
Well, I'm certainly glad both of you did. And I'm certainly glad both of you went to a lot of Mac Worlds because that's how I ended up being a known associate of Mac Observer. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Brian, thanks so much for coming by for the history lesson.
Indeed. And thanks for having us. Thanks for letting us tell the tale.
Dave, thanks for coming by, giving us the history lesson. It was great.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you. This is great. Yeah. Fun stuff.
This is a lot of fun.
Happy anniversary. Yeah.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamott. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observation Podcast for December 28th, 2018, Mac Observer's 20th anniversary. Happy birthday. I will talk to all of you next week. We'll be off Monday and Tuesday. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.